Welcome to The Sound of Economics, the podcast series by Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm Giuseppe Porcaro, and today we will talk about the rise of tech in China with a focus on the rivalry with the United States. This episode is part of Bruegel's focus on global China seen from Europe, which includes our monthly newsletter, Zhonghua Mundus. The link to subscribe is in the show notes. I'm happy, as usual, to welcome Alicia Garcia Herrero with whom we are going to have the conversation today. Hi, Alicia. How are you?
Hello, Giuseppe.
The topic today is quite complex, and we would like to provide an overview of different aspects to navigate our listeners through the issue. The tech sector, both when it comes to the supply chain side as well as the consumer side, is probably the spotlight of the interconnection between economics and geopolitics. So it is worth to start from the big picture, and I would like to ask Alicia help to understand a little bit better how this can be disentangled. There is a lot of talks about deglobalization, but such deglobalization trend in technology is not yet really obvious. And tech decoupling might eventually reinforce the reshuffling of the value chains as the web of sanctions and prohibitions between different blocks, between different countries is expanding. And you've been writing in one of your recent articles about another way of defining what is going on and what is at play, which is bifurcation. And you really make a case about these two elements, decoupling and bifurcation, especially when it comes to big tech platforms and the US-China rivalry. Can you explain what do you mean by this difference between decoupling and bifurcation, and what is the context this world battle is taking place on?
Well, thanks very much, Giuseppe, for the wonderful question. Decoupling is a concept that is not an economic concept. It's an engineering concept. And it's basically the opposite of tight coupling. Tight coupling, decoupling. And this is basically something that happens all of a sudden. And nothing like that can happen all of a sudden. We cannot move from hyper-globalization to no globalization all of a sudden. So in a way, I think the reason why we tend to believe that decoupling can't happen is because the concept is wrong. It's not what we mean is happening or might happen. You see, it's just too abrupt for any economic reality. So every time that we hear Scholz or any other, for that matter, Macron, reassuring Chinese officials that no such thing as decoupling is on the agenda, I would say, of course, because that can't be on the agenda. However, bifurcation is really something that starts diverging. And I think that is much more likely, if not actually, an ongoing reality. If we start with trade, we already see, you know, divergent standards. I give you the example, trade, and especially on technology. If we look at ChatGPT, generative AI, we already know that ChatGPT is blocked not only in China, in Russia, in Iran, North Korea, but why? Also Hong Kong, which is, if you look at the list, pretty interesting. But why? Because there will be another type of generative AI developed in that part of the world, creating its own ecosystem. And probably ethical principles, and I'm not judging whether ours are better, but I'm saying they won't be the same. Yeah. So that bifurcation of standards, technological developments, is, I think, where we're heading. And we could argue that we are bifurcating also increasingly in terms of the financial sector. Yeah, I mean, yes, there's a lot of IPOs still in the US from China, but we know that the clock is ticking. We know that. And we know that China is finding other solutions for its own thirst for capital. So, you know, we know that Chinese students in the US are now much more worried about their future there. And, you know, I mean, all of this is a slow but steady bifurcation. The speed of bifurcation will be different, you know, technology probably faster than trade or finance. But the point is the direction is divergence, not convergence. I think on that we can be pretty comfortable that this is what we're heading. And because this podcast is about technology, I think that's with standards is at the core of the fastest possible bifurcation compared to, as I said, other areas. Yeah.
Let's go back to the geopolitics of all this. The National Security Advisor of the United States, Jake Sullivan, a few weeks ago outlined the Biden administration international economic policy in a speech that he gave at the Hatching Center on Fiscal and Monetary Policy at Brookings on the 27th of April 2023. And Sullivan characterized the China challenge in terms of national security specifically. So when you speak about bifurcation and where this bifurcation might accelerate, definitely he gave some hints. And he called it a small yard with a high fence, something of this sort, in terms of their approach to the economic restrictions. Because limiting military tech transfer specifically and ensuring resilient supply chains are the issue. So again, he was quoting Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the European Commission, saying that also the Biden administration is for de-risking and diversifying, not for decoupling. How do we need to interpret such a small yard in light of the expectations to narrow the restrictions on investment in semiconductors and you know, like maybe leaving outside this yard some other things which have more commercial purposes and less risk of dual use when it comes to national security?
Well, there is two issues here. First, I don't know how Jack Sullivan understands the size of the yard, but you know, anybody on the other side of the Pacific Ocean might actually feel that the yard is pretty big, especially since October 2022 with the chips ban. And put it this way, with the coordination or cooperation of the Netherlands and Japan, you could argue there's 3 yards interconnected, which makes the yard even bigger. So I actually feel that at least so far, the chips ban and other policies followed by the US are not as targeted as he might actually argue they are. And the fence might look high, but it might be full of loopholes. So you see, I think the US problem is the opposite. I think the main issue is that I think the yard is too big and the walls might not be high enough, or actually might be impossible to keep at a level that is effective. And that's the irony and the contradiction in a way in which the US finds itself. And by the way, we will find ourselves, or we are already find ourselves in Europe. And this is also because there's so many more dual use of technology nowadays is a major theme. It's not as easy as in the past to just, you know, separate both. So in that regard, I actually think that targeted de-risking is very difficult. One more reason is that geographies are dynamic. For example, let me give you the example of semiconductors. Who is the largest importer of semiconductors now? Hong Kong, which then exports to the mainland. Well, you could say, okay, I add that jurisdiction, Hong Kong. What if Vietnam starts doing this? What do you do? I mean, where do you stop? So I feel that it's going to be very hard to deal with the risking in that targeted way, unfortunately. And we might end up again in this bifurcation, which is leading to two ecosystems, where you basically go back to this Cold War, you know, type of mentality where I'm in this ecosystem, you're in that ecosystem, unfortunately. So all of this middle ground, whether it's Vietnam or might actually have to disappear because there's no way to deal with this otherwise. And I mean, it's a very frightening scenario, but at the end of the day, we need to realize that targeted de-risking is very difficult, extremely difficult.
But let's go on the loophole part, because I think this is key. Speaking about countries like Vietnam, but I would mention also not only in the Asia Pacific region, but even Latin America and so forth. I think this is key, even here in Europe. Huh? I mean, we've been seeing the case of Turkey with batteries and so forth. These loopholes, when considered from an economic perspective, here now I'm asking you more of an economic view out of it, don't you think that there will be always such loopholes because they actually play at the advantage of what has always been looked at, which is reduced costs of goods, of parts of the value chains that even though they are going to be partially reconfigured and diversified for all the reasons that we are listening as a mantra at the moment. But on the other hand, there will be at some point also some economic needs to be kept in terms of the prices, you know, which goes from the producers to the consumers at the end of the day. So how these loopholes might find themselves pivotal in this new world?
Well, the loopholes exist for two reasons. One is cost reasons, as you mentioned. So basically, we want cheaper oil, so we import oil from, say, India, which has imported it itself from Russia, and we don't look at the origin of oil. But that type of loophole is not the main theme here of the small yard with a big fence. Here, we're talking about technologies that can basically help China move up the ladder, especially militarily. These are the loopholes. Some of those loopholes are not reasoned or through cost or efficiency. It's more about grabbing the technology. Yeah. So my sense is that for these loopholes not to happen, you need very tight alliances. I think countries know when key technological advances, or especially on the military space, cross the border. I don't think that's... But it is more like, are you willing to cooperate? And that's why I'm arguing that we are moving inevitably to two ecosystems, because the hubs, the US and China, will want that trust from their allies or their partners. And I think at some point, the trust will be broken. You see, if a certain technology is exported from the US to, I don't know, imagine just for the sake of South Korea, and it ends up being re-exported, at that level, I think that will create enormous tension. So it's a different level, I would say. I think the cost reason is unavoidable, as you rightly point out. But I think on the dual space, it's a question of how close the alliances are. And we're moving to closer alliances, we like it or not. But that's where we're moving.
But if I may push you a little bit more on that, isn't it like... The main comparison that comes to my mind is the one of the black economy across the globe, which uses loopholes, it seems to me that all you're saying, that's exactly the direction, of course, that might happen. But at the same time, we're going to have more of this unofficial, I'm not saying that this is going to be on the official relations. Now it's still on the official relations, but maybe this is going to tilt into the gray zone rather than the part of the economy that we see on a daylight.
No, absolutely. But this brings us to how high the fence might be. So if you think about terror finance,
yeah,
I mean, the fence did increase, didn't it, after September 11th. So, you know, that's what I mean. I mean, the fence for that will be very high, and the cost of breaching it will be very high, in my view. But for other, low-end technologies, I think you're right.
No, low-end technology, that's going to be, as even the US is saying, they will keep producing cheap stuff in China anyway, and vice versa. So it's going to be a very interesting, completely different, like, multiple geometry, multiple geography kind of new global system.
Yes, I mean, the question is, will it be two ecosystems, which is my take, but then there's countries out there, like India is the most obvious one, or Europe. I mean, I would say these two realities, Europe and India, for different reasons, don't feel comfortable with this. Yeah. On the one hand, I think we both actually have a trade and technology council with the US. You would argue that brings us both, India and the EU, closer to the US. But on the other hand, we know that we are very reluctant to share information, even on cyber. So are we ready for these two ecosystems in these big two blocks? But if we are not, are we strong enough to be independent on technology from A or B? The answer is no, in both cases. So I think if you ask me how I see the world, I think inevitably, no matter what the rhetoric might sound, I think we're inevitably going to end up, at least for these high-end technologies, embedded in one of the two ecosystems. And to me, both EU and India will be embedded in the US ecosystem. And this is because at the end of the day, as regards security, you know, that's the natural. But the rest of Asia, and that's a big part of the world, including Singapore, I would argue, but even Indonesia, I have severe doubts because the degree of integration with China is just massive. So, you know, we are starting to see these tectonic shifts happening that would not have been as visible before COVID. But I think by now it is quite clear in my view.
We are going to close this episode pretty soon, but I would like to have a look at the Chinese side of the story, in the sense that obviously all these measures are aimed to somehow stop access to this very high-end technology from China side, especially when it comes to United States-based technology. How we can access the overall speed of China's catching up with this cutting-edge tech? I mean, what are the expectations? Is this strategy from the US going to achieve what the US administration wants to achieve? And also, even there, it's not very clear, because even Jake Sullivan himself in October 2022 said that the objective is to ensure that the US keeps a lead in this technology, while now in April 2023 saying that the objective is national security rather than an economic competition purpose. But we know that these things are very much enmeshed with each other. So how is China's catching up?
Well, first of all, I can understand very well how China feels. I think, you know, if you've gone so far and your economic progress has been so rapid, and you are so large, and you have your history, your civilizational history, I can understand how China feels. But I have to say that China's problems aren't only the US. I would say maybe if we were to just focus on US-China strategic competition, if that were the only problem, I would say, you know what? Nobody can stop a rising power. Full stop. The problem is that China's problems are well others than the US. And that's where the thing gets complicated. The US has its own flaws, clearly, and we can sense it. And, you know, it's in a way a power in decline for many reasons, societal reasons and so on. I want to get into that one because your question is China. China has a structural deceleration without having achieved an income per capita that gives you the space, if you see what I mean. I mean, let alone a welfare state that allows you to cope with that structural deceleration, whether it's on pensions, health, you name it. So, you know, that fragility, which is basically becoming old too soon, if I may say so, and also a state-led economy that creates a lot of inefficiencies, both together, are a big challenge for China. So I wouldn't focus so much on whether China can withstand the US pressure to contain China. Because if China were strong, I would have no doubt. Because nobody can contain the rising economy forever. The US contained Japan, but Japan was riding on a bubble. You know, I mean, there were lots of issues that made that model unsustainable. So for me, the question is, can China respond to that containment given the constraints that China is going through? And that's the real question. And I don't have an answer. But to me, I would put more weight on China's own domestic constraints than on the strategic competition with the US. Because, Giuseppe, the world is very big. If we even say, imagine India, US, Europe, even Japan and South Korea, you know, the rest of the world is humongous also. You know what I mean? Like, even if we were to cut the world, China would have a humongous market. So I don't buy the story that you can contain China as on paper. No. I worry much more about China's own fixation with the US, you know, rather than fixation with some problems. The same for the US, if you think about it. I think that's where we are today. And I want to end by saying that when we think the US is containing China, rightly so, because the US is basically at the frontier of most technologies. But let me also tell you that China has not shared its technologies as well, whether with the US or anybody else is actually limiting tech transfer. I'm not judging that's wrong because China is basically following the US, but I'm saying it takes two to tango. Here, the two are in the same tango mode at the moment. And that is debilitating both, if you see what I mean, because they're not focusing on their own domestic problems.
And on this, because this time we don't have so much space for continuing this conversation, on this I would like to say, Alicia, that we should come back on the actual issue of the long-term growth prospects of China, because this last question that we were just debating right now, it's much larger than that. So to actually understand and reply to this, we should have a dedicated episode, which I hope we can record very soon. So I would like to thank you for this conversation, and I would like to thank all our listeners, as usual, to tune in to The Sound of Economics, and remind all of you that you can read in open access all the analysis by our scholars on our website www.bruegel.org. Until next time, bye-bye.